morning, folks, and welcome to the Tortoise Shack Sunday Special. Today I'm joined by Tony Groves, Linda Hayden and Vicky Conway. We'll have some guests dropping in, and before we start, we'd like to say Caroline, stay well. Caroline has a chest infection at the moment, and we'd like to say stay well to Caroline. She can't join us this morning. So I'm going to jump straight in with the budget. Well, we were all looking forward to the budget, every single one of us. Linda, what was your takeaway from the budget?
Nothing in there for childcare, but an extra 2.4 million for greyhound racing. What?
Yeah, I know. Vicky, what was your takeaway?
I think, you know, when you look at the poor commitments around housing and ICU beds, and then at the same time, 1,100 new positions in An Garda Síochána, when the Commission on the Future of Policing had said a number of years ago that, you know, we've never stepped back and assessed how many guards do we need, what kind of staffing do we need. Like, there's no evidence basis for just increasing. And yes, you know, people want more guards, but like, what is that going to look like? And the guards is already at the largest it's ever been in the history of the state. So there's just inconsistencies there that I think haven't been properly analysed. You know, do we want more guards or more ICU beds or more houses? Like,
Tony, will you address it, but address it in the context of wider Europe?
That was the frustration with the budget. It's been called unprecedented, the biggest budget in the history of the state. It was going to be all of those things because it had to be. But they've treated it as an emergency budget as opposed to a mindset budget. So in other countries, we've seen in Italy, we've seen in Spain, where they've said this is an opportunity now to borrow at 0%, actually sell bonds at 0%, and the market is queuing up to buy them. And then you can turn around and they're saying we're going to eradicate poverty, tackle inequality, create 800,000 jobs. And in Ireland, we're going, and let's just see how the deficit is at the end of this year. And you're going, ah, lads. So we're looking at, and again, I can understand the logic because we have this mentality. They're talking about there's poverty-proof steps in the budget. So when you're automatically saying there's legislation coming in now that's gonna increase poverty, and you're taking steps to poverty-proof it. So, you know, whether it's increasing fuel allowances or these sort of things that we're trying to do on the back end, why have we got so little ambition for that? That's like, why do we want to accept that we're going to mitigate the worst impacts of the things that we're doing, as opposed to thinking more broadly and saying, well, actually, our economy is skewed. Our GDP is only going to be the fourth least affected in the world by COVID. And we spoke to Seamus Coffey about this, the reason being that we have a two-tier economy. We have multinationals, we have pharma, we have tax avoidance. That's what makes all of this money that's pouring through the country. And we need people to understand that's not in the real economy. And in the real economy, people are suffering. So what we're doing is we're taking a few bob from them, we're passing it down through social transfers, increases of different allowances and all of these sort of things. And it leaves us snookered, Martin, that we're able to say, the government are saying, this is unprecedented, it's unparalleled. All of these words are thrown around. And that's true in an Irish context, but it just shows that the real, real bad lack of ambition and a lack of understanding of what's happened to the global financial situation. Everybody knows now the EU is pushing you to rebuild your economy, to do a just transition, do all of these positive things that we all talk about. And here's your opportunity to go and do it for free and the deficit be damned. But we're still talking about the deficit. So it's just worrying.
I think there was a couple of opportunities missed, big opportunities. I think the restoration of PUP was absolutely one of those. We were on the brink of going into another lockdown, and we are until they do. And that is where we are. And they have dismantled all of the protections that they had to bring in the beginning. And somebody somewhere has to explain the rationale for doing that when there is a second wave clearly here. Why would you dismantle these things? The last point I have on it is, if you want to get a feel for what they were doing in the budget, they took the 1.5 billion out of the rainy day fund, and that was just daft. There isn't a household in the country would raid the nest egg if they were being handed free money, not one. So they can't even run it like a household would be run, and they're certainly not running it like an economy would be run. I'm going to move us on a bit to the saga, the ongoing unbelievable saga about mother and baby homes. Vicky, will you come in first on that?
Yeah, so I'm sure lots of people have listened back to the really brilliant episode that Tony and Linda did with Maeve O'Rourke, which really explains very, very well what's going on with the current piece of legislation and where that's at. And we know that that piece of legislation was rushed through the Seanad on Friday and is going back to the Dáil on Tuesday, I think. And I think as a group, we felt it was really important to keep this in the public domain, to keep talking about it, to keep asking you to contact your TDs and whoever else about this. But we're really delighted today that Noelle Brown, an actress, has joined us. Noelle was born in Bessborough House and went to the commission herself. And she's agreed to come on and talk to us a little bit about why she went to the commission and what that meant for her and what she was hoping to get from it. So thanks so much for coming on, Noelle. So why is it that you went to the commission? What were you hoping to get from it?
Well, I went for two reasons when I heard it had come into existence, to share my story, but also to ask them to investigate whether I had been the subject of vaccine trials while I was in Bessborough, because it was very common knowledge they were going on around the time I was there in the mid-60s. So they were the two reasons I went. The Commission of Investigation, which I didn't know at the time, but I was told, was two separate organizations. There was the Confidential Committee and the actual Investigation Branch. So in order to get the Investigation Branch, you had to go to the Confidential Committee. So I signed up to meet with them and I met with them in 2017. And it wasn't a very nice experience. I spoke with a barrister who didn't really seem to know anything about the issues around adoption. It was very exposing. It was very emotional. But I felt that I should do it as I had a voice. I'd co-written a play with my friend Michelle Forbes. So I had told my story in the form of a play since 2013, so I was well able to talk about it. And so many people I knew who were adopted or had been birth mothers didn't have the emotional, they just weren't able to go and talk because it was such a difficult emotional prospect. So I went with that in mind. I told my story. It was a barrister I was talking to. He asked some really insensitive questions. It was a very difficult experience for me. But on the day I asked them, firstly, they said to me that whatever I said would be put away. No one would ever see it. No one would ever read it. So quite quickly, I realized that it was a pointless exercise because I'd hoped to affect change by sharing my story. That's what I'd been doing since 2013. So on the day, I also said, I waived my right to anonymity, but they still said, no, it's going to be private. But on the day, I also said, can you please, put me forward to the investigation branch of this so they can investigate whether I was the subject of vaccine trials. They said, we will decide whether you are a fit candidate and get back to you. So I waited. That was February, I think, when I met them. And then in September, I called them again and said, are you going to investigate this? And I got a very curt letter from a solicitor to say that they were not going to investigate. They sent me back to Tusla and said, go and talk to them and see, what information you can get from them. So it was a really difficult day. They kept asking me why I was there, why I chose to do this. The whole day was about tea and sympathy as opposed to actually, activating some real, change around this issue, around, data that we were denied, our birth certs, everything as adopted people. And it was a useless exercise. When I was leaving, the woman in administration said to me, did you have a happy childhood? Just randomly. And I said, well, yes, I grew up in a good family. And she said, well, didn't it all work out in the end? That was her take on it. So it was a very upsetting experience and kind of a pointless exercise in terms of, affecting change. And I was an activist at the time. And I thought by speaking and sharing my story, which is very difficult and very emotionally challenging, that it would make a difference. But it was a waste of my time, and it didn't bring me any closer to finding out the information that I wanted around the vaccine trials. So that was my experience.
I think that's a really important point, that even if the legislation gets changed and this stuff doesn't get sealed up, it's important that we know that this has not been a process that people have been happy with. So our starting point is really poor in that regard.
Yeah.
Did you want to?
Yeah, Noelle, like it's one of the things that I've kind of from talking to various different people that are involved in it over the week. It's very clear that the whole process, because it didn't even include all of the homes, that there's been a huge amount of people who aren't getting any option to have their voice heard about it, or, you know, there's a huge amount of people who are being talked about and not being given any agency at all with this. And, you know, it should be, you're going to get your 4,000 page report and a pat on the head by the sounds of things. Like, what can we do to make sure that this isn't the end of this, that it's only the starting point and that stuff moves forward from it?
But it's also that we're not given any agency. We're infantilized. Their decisions are being made by complete strangers all the time. From the very time that you try to access your birth information, a stranger in an office has access. You don't. And that has been my experience. I've spent nearly 20 years from 2002 until January of last year trying to get a complete picture of my birth family, my birth parents, and it has taken me that amount of time. And it's disgraceful. And what this says, the sealing of the records, is we will bury this even further in secrecy and give you even less access. There will be no investigation into the 900 babies that are in a mass grave in Besborough. 64 are only accounted for. There'll be nothing done about Tuam, Sean Ross Abbey. There are mass graves all over Ireland with infants and babies and children, and nobody seems to care. But there's this constant, and the fast tracking of this piece of legislation is so offensive for survivors. It's an absolute disgrace. And I cannot believe that what was done to us by the Catholic Church is now continued by the Irish state. And if this is a country where we have repeal, where we have marriage equality, and our fundamental human rights and choice around deeply personal family information is denied us, and every step that is being taken is about shutting it down, layering everything over in secrecy. And I cannot believe that in 2020, that is what we're up against. And it appalls me, it has upset every survivor when something like this happens. It's going, you will never know. We will never acknowledge your existence. It's about trying to eradicate us as a group, a minority group, to 100,000 of us, actually, to pretend that we didn't exist. Our lives began the day we were adopted. And from then on, our past, our birth was obliterated. And it's even our birth names are now treated as third party or protected by GDPR. Our names, our identities, and it's horrific. And this legislation speaks volumes that it is that's what they're going to do. We will never get truth, reconciliation. Up until now, it's been delay, deny till we die. And it's like they're doing the same thing now. When those records are unsealed, if I'm lucky enough to be alive, I will be 84. Justice will not have been served. And I don't know, I'm so angry and upset by the whole thing, as are a lot of survivors.
And the thing is,
sorry, Linda, you're doing some work at the moment to try and convince those in power not to do this. Can you tell people what they can do?
So we are, I'm in the process of setting up the Victims Alliance, and we're trying to work with as many different victim groups, including groups that have been affected by institutional abuse and systemic abuse through institutions. So there's various different things that you can do. At the moment, we're still in setup mode, so we're not in a place until the new year to actually do some active campaigning on it. But I would say to people, write an individual email to your TDs, to your TDs that you know can affect this. Roderick O'Gorman, any of the senators, anyone who you think can put a pause on this, write to them, but do it individually so it doesn't get caught by a blocker. make your voice heard, get on your social media, start telling people about this. We've done, we did the podcast with Maeve this week. We've obviously had Noelle on now. Share these out. I've done with Mary Ryan O'Brien from Ahantis, talking about the adoptee rights side of things on the Pack Woman pod. So get the message out there, start talking about it, and say to people, hey, will you do me a favor? Will you just send a few emails? Because the more of us, the TDs and senators have said they had an unprecedented amount of public pressure about this. If you don't accept further trauma and violence being inflicted by the state on people who have already been put through enough, then get your arses in gear. We did repeal, we did marriage equality. This is exactly the same. We have to get yourselves behind them, make sure that you're using your voice to raise up people who have had enough of being shit on and left behind and not being given their voice. Amplify their voices.
But sorry, can you email your TDs today or tomorrow? It's in the Dáil on Tuesday. So this is really, really immediate. This is our chance to really push for that change. Noelle, we might speak to you again, but thank you so much for coming on this morning. And, you know, I know this has been really, really brief, but it's really great to really hear what it means to people, what's happening right now. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Noelle.
Thank you
so much.
Tony, we're going to change now and we're going to change tack and we're going to look at Brexit. And we are very happy to be joined by Dawn Foster from the UK. Tony, I'll leave it with you.
Hi, Dawn. Thanks for coming on. First and foremost, I always end up asking you, how are you keeping yourself? Are you still cocooned?
No, I got my test results back, so I'm allowed out in public again. So a friend of mine who is a doctor actually caught COVID in the line of work, and I went for a coffee with her. So the NHS app told me to self-cocoon until I got a test result back, and I got a text last night, so I'm fine now.
This is one of many tests on over the last number of months. But I suppose the big question is, does anybody in the UK care at all that Brexit is happening and it's a no deal scenario now at this stage, or is just everybody just still caught in the COVID limbo?
I think a lot of people care. So I think essentially people are, you know, quite worn out by COVID. Not a huge amount has changed unless you're in the north, where a lot of people are potentially faced with, even stricter kind of COVID policies. But now that Boris Johnson has come out and said that he's kind of waiting for a no deal, then, you know, I think a lot more people care. Obviously, in December, he said, and all of the Conservatives said they had an oven-ready deal for Brexit during the election, which was designed to kind of pull people in. A lot of Brexiteers seemed quite happy with it, but at the same time, a lot of people who voted to remain in the EU felt a bit happier about it. They felt a little bit more secure, and Labour, obviously came out and said that they didn't trust the Conservatives and that actually no deal was Boris Johnson's ideal scenario. And surprise, surprise, he's come out and said so now. And I think exactly that. I think that, you know, essentially the Conservatives expect people not to pay attention to it and think that they can get out of the EU, precisely that way. And a lot of people have come out and said you haven't thought about Northern Ireland, and you know, you haven't thought about how the border is going to work. And Boris Johnson, his answer is that essentially they'll build a bridge and it'll be fine. And he doesn't seem to have thought about the fact that the exact area that he wants to build a bridge is currently full of lots of
munitions dump, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's a munitions dump. It's filled with all sorts of bombs that it seems absolutely emblematic of the entire process that this is the idea, is we'll build it all on the side of where everything's just going to go kablowy. like, we've spent months and years in this country watching Brexit roll on, but we've seen now that all the calls are to start preparing for a no deal. We know the markets factored it in nearly 18 months ago in many ways. Just in a political sense, I know you said there are people are concerned about it, but in real terms, what does this politics mean to the likes of, because when we first spoke, you were writing about housing shortages, inequality, poverty, and all these things. I can only imagine it's all exacerbated.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, a huge number of people, especially in deprived areas, rely on the EU to actually give them funding to help a lot of these things. So I grew up in Wales, and huge number of areas in Wales, especially the most deprived areas in the valleys, have a huge number of buildings and a huge number of social services, and a lot of areas that have been helped massively by EU funding, and those areas are now essentially going to be left to fend for themselves. The Conservatives don't really care about them, and they will find that a massive amount of money is withdrawn from the UK, and they don't really have any plans to borrow against the market. So Conservatives are huge fans of austerity. Essentially, in 2010, they ripped a huge amount of money from social services and lots of different areas. And Brexit is just going to exacerbate that. A massive amount of money will be pulled out, and the Conservatives haven't got any plans to spend in areas where, in deprived areas that have Labour MPs.
But does that just lead on to one more thing? Does that just mean that the culture war that has been successfully run in the UK for a number of years, and I don't even think culture war is a real term, to be honest with you. I think it's a made-up thing just to divide and conquer. But however, that's the phraseology we're using in the lexicon these days. Is that just going to ramp up? Are we going to see the end of Dominic Cummings' influence? You know, it seems to boil down to that, really, from looking from afar. You know, we need rid of Cummings, really.
I don't think Dominic Cummings is going anywhere. Boris Johnson is a huge fan of him. Essentially, he thinks that he is a massive brain. Before he was hired by Boris Johnson, he had this terrible blog that a huge number of people thought was really clever. And it was essentially because you couldn't understand it, and it didn't make any sense. And, a huge number of academics and other people read it and said, this is absolute nonsense. He thinks he's a genius. And essentially, because people can't understand it, they fully bought into his myth making. And he's now in number 10, and he's essentially pushing Boris Johnson to take on all of his ideas. And, you know, at the very beginning of the COVID academic, he caught it because a huge number of MPs caught it and gave it to each other. And he decided that he would, you know, break all of the COVID rules in place and, you know, drive up to see his parents, and drove to a nearby castle, and then claimed that he went there to test his eyesight.
It just brings us on, I suppose, because I just think of how powerful so many mediocre men are, and I'm speaking as one, but without the power. But I just think in terms of the people who are running these places, and I think yesterday, actually, I know it was well pointed out that when everybody sat down to make the decisions on Ireland, for example, there wasn't one female voice in present at a table. It is really, really, really stark when you see that, and particularly when it comes to the influence of Dominic Cummings. And I suppose it goes back to our argument that we had with Mick Clifford last week about the idea of that just because they're not actually sitting in Parliament doesn't mean that they don't have influence at the table. You know, I keep making the point, Nigel Farage was his party were very limited in their success, yet he's possibly one of the most influential politicians of of our lifetime.
Sorry, I'm going to move us on, guys. Brexit, and we are all so desperately interested in Brexit, but I'm going to move us on to COVID. Dawn, would you give us a quick idea of where you are with COVID in the UK?
It's essentially, I think I'd say that the rules are there and the rules seem to be working. One of the biggest problems with COVID is essentially a huge number of private companies have managed to make a huge amount of money from it. So Serco have managed to fill their pockets, and Dido Harden, who is a big friend of Boris Johnson, is running the test and trace scheme. And one of the biggest problems is that essentially the people who have come in contact with people who have COVID, of those people, the company that, you know, the scheme that Dido Harden runs is only at the moment getting in contact with about 60% of people. So 40% of people who have, you know, potentially got COVID aren't being spoken to, that, you know, nobody's getting in touch with them. And all that does is spread it even further.
Vicky, will you come in and give us your thoughts on where we are with COVID at the moment?
Well, I'm up in level 4 Donegal, and it's been sad this week seeing some of the local shops shut, and you can definitely feel the difference in the town where I am. I don't know. I'm so frustrated by the information coming out on Thursday or Friday, and now we're Sunday, and people being left to wonder and worry about where we're going to be. And there's just such a dearth of leadership. I really can't get over it. I mean, even whatever I thought about Neil Martin, I thought he'd do a better job than this. It is unreal. Like, why was he not straight out to the cameras last night after that meeting telling us where we are? Like, fine, if he's going to say, look, we need to reflect on A, B, C and D because these are the issues, but we're doing it, we're working hard. Like, the people need that right now. It's so hard facing into winter and Christmas and all of that. You know, it's hard enough at the best of times in Ireland. Like, we need more certainty and we need more leadership.
Before I go to Linda, and I'm going to get Linda's opinion, I just want to remind everybody, any questions, anything you want to ask, just type them in there and we'll come to them at the end of the show. Linda.
I'm very frustrated at the government taking the trope of mental health. You have to mind everybody's mental health. And yeah, they have not put the supports in place. And I have to remind people really strongly on this. It is the government's duty to provide supports for everybody, whether it be vulnerable people or people with mental health issues who need support during COVID. And it has not happened. So stop talking about mental health and the economy and stuff like that, unless you're going to put your money where your mouth is and start supporting people in the way that they need. Like, it's so annoying and it's so insulting to people with mental health issues because they know exactly the supports aren't there for them.
Can I just make one quick comment on that? We had Fiona Coyle on the budget analysis show, and she was fantastic for mental health reform. And she said that they cautiously welcomed the increase in the mental health budget. But then she pointed out that they've always had an increase in the mental health budget over the last number of years. And going back to the time when the now tarnished, it was the Minister for Health. And every time they assigned the money, they diverted it and they never actually received the funds. So it's all well and good saying there's, you know, an additional 25 million for mental health and supports. If it's not actually going to materialise, that's just no good to anyone.
12 million of that is for Portran. So, like, nearly half of that is for a project that's already been decided.
Well, that was the other thing that Michael Taft pointed out. It's very hard to unpick what's actually new in the budget and what's already been announced and has just been re-announced again. Dawn, you'd notice this is an old political trick just to re-announce. Oh, we've got these 3,000 jobs. You go, didn't the last minister announce that when they went with a shovel? So, you know, it's an old political trick.
Okay, I'm going to come in and I'm going to say on this, there's a piece in one of our reputable newspapers this morning that says a minister has accused NPHET of being violently political. Now, here's my take on it. NPHET give their advice. They look at the data, they crunch the numbers, they run the whatever they run, and then they give advice. to the government. Now, twice the government has not acted on the advice. Now we're at a stage the same, lockdown at level 5. And you have what's inside the Dáil using the same language to undermine NPHET as the guys outside the Dáil wrapped in flags that we know are fascists. So this is a very dangerous alignment between right-wing politicians, big business, and crazy people. And it's a very, very dangerous alliance. And we need each person in government to be accountable for what they say. Every single one of them. If you are deciding that people must wait until ICUs are full, have the guts to put your name to it and stand up. Don't hide behind a political party. It's cowardice. Now, I'm going to move us on. Linda, you were telling me about somebody called Dominic, and I have absolutely, and I didn't look it up last night, purposely didn't. I want to see if this wows me.
Might just say, I can't believe we're talking about this.
Okay, so can I just point out, this is for Caroline. Caroline has been obsessed with this all week, and she's too sick to come on today. So we said we would still cover it for her because she wanted to bring it up. So Lily James and Dominic West were filmed in Rome, I believe. They were filming a movie together, and there was all sorts of hugging, kissing, you know, two of them on an electric scooter going around Rome looking all romantic and stuff. And then all of a sudden, he was obviously dragged back to Limerick by the wife. And they did this cringeworthy display of public togetherness, which just really, like, it just didn't ring true at all. But they had a note. They'd written a note to say, our marriage is very strong. So Caroline has been obsessed with this all week. And there's like,
let's not blame Caroline. Let's tell the truth.
You want to go there too.
I suggested it. Caroline ran with it. So we'll go with it.
No.
We do have to have the odd tabloid thing every now and again, you know.
just justice for Jimmy McNulty. That's all I'll say. That's if you go out with the guy from The Wire, that's what you're going to get yourself into. He's not exactly...
Oi, now, can we not be defending Jimmy here on this panel? Like,
there are two and two. Actually, there's three. You're well outnumbered. Stop it.
But was he not just promoting the movie the way movie stars do?
Potentially, but like in a week where there hasn't been an awful lot going on outside of really heavy political stuff, people haven't had an awful lot of distractions. So they've obviously, it's worked if that was the plan. But I tell you, the display...
Can you actually name the movie?
No, I don't know what the movie is.
It hasn't really worked.
The Wire, I think, is it? Wire Part 2.
But what it has done is, it's done what it's supposed to, but I would be concerned that the if it's fake, the fake display looked a lot more genuine than what went on outside the castle in Limerick this week. So, yeah. So
it is true, though, that there's, like, he has no rights to that castle. So there's a little issue there. Like, you know, nonetheless, he knows where his bread is buttered, and it's not on the back of a Vespa in Rome.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you now, thanks for that, Linda. I needed that distraction in my life, and talking about inspirational people like Dominic, I'm going to move over to Vicky. Vicky, who has inspired you this week, and why have they inspired you this week?
Yeah, so this is going to be a new thing on the Sunday special where we talk about like our tortoises or tortesses of the week, I think. For me, it's Mabel Rourke, hands down. She has done an astounding job this week of ensuring that the issue of the mother and baby homes records legislation is front and center, that every outlet is talking about it. She is like just giving us these deeply cohesive, informed views, pointing out all of the fallacies left, right and center, and just sticking it to the politicians. And it's, yeah, they've
Mabel
leaving Rook, them with
take
nowhere
a bow,
to turn.
Please take a bow. She's online with us, Mabel. Take a bow.
Thanks a million, everyone. We just need to keep going for another week.
See? And she doesn't even, it's just, yeah.
I know.
She's amazing.
Mabel, sorry about that. I just saw you were there and said you might as well have...
You're a brat.
Be told,
right? He is a brat.
Linda, who is your inspirational person of the week and why?
She's probably my inspirational person for all time, and it is Senator Lynn Ruane. Lynn, if anyone who works in activism circles will know, Lynn Ruane will never speak about the amount of stuff that she does. Like, you can, as an activist, if you have a situation that's in dire need and you need somebody to put a bit of pressure on straight away, she is always at the end of the phone. I've had her offer to go to sit with people who are in crisis, because I haven't been able to get there myself. Like, she is a phenomenal person. She doesn't go into anything lightly. She considers absolutely everything that she does. And she's playing a blinder on the mother and baby homes this week as well. So she is my hero of the week.
Tom. And she started a new consultation on social exclusion issues and in the legal profession as well, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Don, who is your inspirational person of the week and why?
It's very hard to say because a huge number of people have been terrible. I think it's probably Andy Burnham, who's the mayor of Manchester, mainly because he spent the entire week attacking the government, and most politicians haven't. So probably Andy Burnham. He was on a huge number of political programs this morning, having a huge go at everybody else and talking a lot about the north-south divide in England and why it's an absolute mess since, you know, like Liverpool, Manchester, a huge number of places in the north of England are threatened with lockdown.
Tony, now before you rush in with your answer, Tony, you can't choose yourself. You must choose somebody else. Tony, who has been your inspirational person of the week?
Are you going to pick me? No, I'm going to say there's been an incredible reaction to the actual Tortoise Shack platform this week. And probably the standout one of the moments was when we got a mention in the Dáil by Thomas Pringle. And I'm going to be not just say this, but it's Thomas, because it's more importantly, it's our friend Bear Grogan, who was actually our hero of the week. So thank you so much for helping, for supporting. And always, like when we started off doing live shows and all the rest of it, there was Bear. So I really appreciate what you've done on a personal level. I have been reminded, and I know I should say it, just remember, just before I forget, the inquest into the Stardust start open again this week. I was just, Please, the journal are covering it. You can just check Lynn Boylan's timeline. You'll find the details. Don't lose track on that, because it will fall by the wayside in the shitstorm of so many other things going on.
Now, before I come in with my favourite person, I just want to let people know you can now send letters and packages to nursing homes without having to pay for them. It would be a really nice idea just to send Christmas cards. Wouldn't it be a really nice idea to send Christmas cards? You know, I just think it's free. Buy a Christmas card, make a Christmas card, send a Christmas card. You know, it's easy.
Hand knit some scarves, throw them in.
Yeah. Packets of Werther's Originals always go down, and puzzle books.
Yeah. So there's an opportunity there. Take the opportunity. You know, the government's paying for it. Why not? My person of the week is Jacinda Ardern, or as I like to call her in Irish, Jacinta Ahern. I think she is truly inspirational. I think she has grabbed the COVID bull by the horns. She hasn't let vested interests dictate her route. She has made her country safe. There's kids going to school. There's events taking place. And I know people are going to scream, oh, it's an island with 2,000 miles of water around it. But look, an island is not determined by the distance it is from the next island close to it. An island is an island. If you can't swim to it, then people have to be flown in or brought in by boat. You can control what happens on an island much more than you can control what happens in mainstream or in mainland Europe. So she's my inspirational person. Plus, she's kind of cool. She's not an old white man. And I think that's kind of cool. So, yeah, look forward to the day when the likes of Maeve O'Rourke and Bear Grogan are in government. Really look forward to that day. Don, come ahead.
Can I ask, in Ireland, have you had a huge number of terrible politicians saying that they feel that they are very similar to Jacinda? Because over in the UK, we've got some of the most idiotic people in public life claiming that some of the stupidest politicians, most of whom are incredibly right-wing, are very, very similar to her. None of them are socialists. They're all very centrist, and most of them said that the Labour Party was too left-wing for them and have left. One of them is actually left Labour for the Conservatives. So have you had that in Ireland?
Linda?
We had Simon Harris yesterday, who used to be our Minister for Health. He's our Minister for Higher Education. And he was like, oh, this is amazing. Look, we could absolutely have this here. Yet he oversaw the worst policies and is still overseeing some really shocking policies. You know, like, he was on the ball. We can have it here. And I made the point last night that we do have people who are of that caliber here, but we don't vote for them enough, or we don't give them enough power. And I have had a shit show in my mentions all day. It's just been so frustrating because I've had people who say, oh yeah, well, you know, when they get elected, they're all on the same foot. They're not. There was a webinar that happened here, I think this week or last week, about women in politics and the barriers that they face. And there was a huge amount of stuff that came out from that. So, we've had
a queue.
Yeah.
We've had a queue of people saying, you know, and so totally oblivious, totally centre-right politicians going, how wonderful is this? And we can get rid of that polarisation. And you're like, really? Again, it goes back to what I said earlier. Hands up, mediocre man here, been able to put up myself and say, yeah, this is me. And I think at the time I see Peter Maguire's in the audience and he said, where's our Julia Ardern? Oh, Jacinda Ardern. I think on Julia Roberts in my head for some reason. And I said, look, I'm already making the film. But I was thinking to myself, yeah, sure, I'll throw my hat in the ring, messing with it, because that's what happens in this country. We've people who put themselves in that. We're in the point of view where I saw last night the tarnished left government buildings 2 hours before the cabinet meeting was over, or the leaders meeting was over. We just seem to accept all sorts of shite here, Don, and yet we get away with it because we point across and say, look, it's not Boris, it's not, at least he's
and actually the only surprise in him leaving early was that he didn't leak the discussion.
I'm
gonna call a halt because we could keep going like this all day. Suffice to say, Simon Harris is Leo Varadkar, is the bird to Leo Varadkar's bull. And that's, suffice to say, work that out for yourself. He is the bird to Leo Varadkar's bull. Thanks all for joining us this morning. Now, if anybody has questions, please, Tony.
Can we wrap, just to let people know, these shows are weekly now. If you are a member, you can attend. We will leave it here for the people who aren't actually members, and we're going to continue on with questions and some suggestions and comments from the audience now.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing before we finish up, which is that next Sunday, I suspect Tony won't be here because he's going to be out running a marathon, because this year Tony will have run on Sunday, fingers crossed, all going well, 2,020 miles in aid of Anna Liffey and the ICCHH, so, which I'm pronouncing wrong, but it's absolutely incredible. And go on Tony's Twitter feed, get the links, support him, raise funds for these amazing charities, but it's brilliant stuff from Tony's.
Not bad for a mediocre man, Tony. Not bad.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.